to California now and a view of immigration from a church pew. For some Catholics, St. Toribio Romo has become the patron of immigrants. His spirit is said to guide, feed, and shelter immigrants as they journey across the U.S.-Mexico border. Some of Romo's relics are currently attracting crowds in the U.S. NPR's Sam Sanders has this postcard.
A bit of St. Toribio Romo's ankle bone sits in a glass enclosure about the size of a big watch face. That enclosure sits right in the chest of a 4-foot-tall wooden statue of Romo. Usually, that statue resides in Mexico, in Romo's hometown of Santa Ana de Guadalupe. But this month, these relics of the patron saint of immigrants are on tour through several Catholic churches in Southern California. Last week, they were at St. Marcelina's Church for a few days in Commerce, California, just outside of East L.A. A worship band warms up while 4 teenagers carry the statue outside on wooden poles for a procession down the street and into the church.
Que viva mi Cristo, que viva mi Rey.
Father Martin Federico Rizzo Soto leads the crowd. He's traveled with the relics from Mexico.
Que viva Santo Toribio Romo!
Que viva!
Que viva Cristo Rey!
Rizzo Soto's sermon says Toribio Romo can bring strength.
Hoy, a todos los jóvenes.
Today, all the young immigrants that will travel through so many dangerous paths, this valor that St. Toribio had gives them strength. Although the path is difficult, it is not impossible.
St. Toribio Romo was a Catholic priest in Mexico in the early 1900s. He actually was against Mexicans immigrating to the U.S. He wrote a satirical play about what happens to Mexicans that go north. He said the trip made Mexicans soft, arrogant, inauthentic, and maybe even Protestant. He was killed during the Cristero Civil War when Catholics in Mexico fought against the anti-church Mexican government. Somehow, not even his family really knows, Romo became linked with the journey across the border. Thousands of immigrants say they've seen Romo, a tall, fair-skinned, blue-eyed man, giving them food or water or a ride. People there at the church said that if anyone needs a patron saint, it's those who make that dangerous journey across the U.S.-Mexico border.
Because it's very, very, very hard.
Dani Maradiaga sings with the youth band at St. Marcelina's. Her parents crossed the border from Honduras. Maradiaga says as hard as the journey is, it's just as hard for young immigrants, like those coming now from Central America, to adjust to American life.
I don't think they realize how hard it is for like teenagers to make it here as immigrants and then have to go to school, learn a completely new language, and like have to make new friends.
Alex Franco is also a member of the church and in the band. He says many immigrants are stereotyped once they're here, and that's not fair.
We are not to be related to drugs or to the violence that's going on over there. Most of the people that are coming over here are trying to escape that. So they're looking for a new life in peace. That's the reason my parents came over here.
At the end of the Mass, a concert starts up right outside. Some people trickle out for the music, but more stay inside, lining up to touch the statue of Santo Toribio Romo. Hands and rosaries and pictures of loved ones are pressed against the ankle bone inside of the glass, inside of his chest. Prayers and blessings for those who journey, and for those who have already arrived. Sam Sanders, NPR News.
El padre Toribio Romo nació y fue muerto en Jalisco. Lo matan los sagradistas por ser seguidor de Cristo. Desde entonces se aparece, mucha gente ya lo ha visto.
We begin today with a story we've been following, which is the huge increase in unaccompanied minors, mainly from Central America, who've been crossing the border into the United States. You've seen that the issue is very much on the minds of political leaders. Tens of thousands of kids are expected to make the crossing this year if current trends continue. But this is the kind of story that captures the attention of people from all walks of life and across the political spectrum, because it touches on so many complicated emotions. And we've observed that faith leaders, even more than political leaders sometimes, are the people who learn of a crisis and are called upon to respond in some way, and they are. But how? Some say it's a humanitarian crisis and it is the faith community's obligation to step in. Others are hearing that issues like poverty here at home should be an even bigger priority. We wanted to call upon two faith leaders who are involved in issues of public concern to see how they are responding and what their congregants are telling them. So we've called Pastor Rudy Rasmus. He's senior pastor of St. John's Downtown in Houston, Texas. His congregation is a very active urban ministry, and he's with us from member station KUHF in Houston. Pastor Rasmus, thanks for joining us once again.
Hey, it's good to hear from you today.
And Russell Moore is the president of the Southern Baptist Convention's Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. That is a group that's been very active over the years in matters of public concern, and he joined us from their offices in Nashville. And Mr. Moore, thank you so much for joining us once again.
Great
as well.
Great to be with you today.
So let me start with you, Pastor Rudy Rasmus. You lead a large church in Houston. You're known for, your congregation is known for its active outreach, for example, to the homeless. You're very involved in ministry to that group, for example, in building like a housing center, as I understand it, trying to address homelessness in that issue. I wanted to ask what your congregants are telling you about this, this issue of these undocumented children coming across. Is this an issue that's on their minds, and what are they saying?
You know, Michelle, this is an issue on their minds, and it's very reminiscent of an event that happened about 10 years ago when a storm came through New Orleans. A lot of people ended up in Houston, Texas, about 300,000 in 48 hours. And this city responded in an amazing way to that particular human crisis. And this crisis is equal to us. I've been asking my congregants over the last couple of weeks. And as a matter of fact, yesterday in service, we lifted up not only a prayer, but a question as to what should our response be in this moment. And I'm hearing some interesting responses, but all of the responses I have heard were coming from the vantage point that we should care.
What do you mean by interesting? Tell me more about that.
You know, these are children, and many of the crises that we have faced here in Houston before have been mostly centered around adults. You know, over the last 22 years, the ministry that I'm a part of has provided care to mostly homeless adults, and now here's a crisis with children. And what we do know, an unaccompanied child in this region is prey. Houston is one of the leading cities in this country for sex trafficking and human trafficking, and in that the level of alert goes up another decibel because of the potential harm to innocent children, regardless to how these children got to the border, regardless to how they ended up in our state and in our city. We do have a moral response.
I'm going to press you on exactly what you think that response should be, or what at least you're thinking about. But I want to hear from Russell Moore. Mr. Moore, thanks for joining us once again. Many people might remember that you, along with another of conservative Christian leaders, have been pressing for immigration reform. For example, you wrote a piece for the Wall Street Journal, an opinion piece with Ralph Reed back in March, where you called upon Congress or the House to pass legislation that reflects conservative values of strong and secure borders, the rule of law, economic opportunity, and strengthening of the family. Basically, pressing conservatives to take a more active role in advancing immigration reform. What are your thoughts about the current crisis and what should happen? And I'm curious about what people are telling you.
Well, I think it's a moral crisis, and I think that what's happening is the awakening of a conscience in this country, because people are seeing images of children. These are children who are in harm's way. They're being, in many cases, crammed into detention facilities. This is a humanitarian crisis. It's a moral crisis. It ought to evoke a conscience that says this is not the way that things ought to be. At the same time, I find that some of the responses that are coming back would love to see an easy, quick fix. And so there are many people in congregations, for instance, when they see these images on television, would say, well, let's just send some mission trips there and fix this crisis. And in reality, until the government comes in and fixes an incoherent policy and also deals with the root problem of people who are fleeing from a drug war going on in Central America, we're not going to be able to get a fix on this.
Does the commission have some guidance for individual congregations at this point about how they should respond or what they should do?
Well, there's a limit on what individual congregations can do, because congregations can't simply show up at the border and start dealing with the refugees that are there, because they're in government holding patterns waiting for hearings to determine what the refugee status of the children would be. There are groups and Christians and churches who are ministering as best they can. But until the government comes in and takes responsibility for the government's own failed policies here, there's a limit on what we can do. What I've been seeking to do is to speak to our people, to the people of Christ, and to say we need to make sure that we understand that the response to this cannot be what it is in some sectors of American society, which is fear and loathing against immigrants and against refugees. We need to recognize that we have a moral responsibility to love neighbor, and Jesus tells us the story of a man who passes by someone who is beaten on the road, a Samaritan, and he cares for that man. We ought to listen to that message and recognize that our response to this crisis, it can't be a simple and easy fix, but it also can't be to say, well, who is my neighbor in Spanish?
If you're just joining us, we're talking about how faith communities are responding to this huge increase in undocumented children who are crossing the border. I'm speaking with Russell Moore, the president of the Southern Baptist Convention's Ethics and Public Policy Commission, and Pastor Rudy Rasmus of St. John's Downtown in Houston. Those are both prominent faith leaders involved in issues of public concern. So, you know, to that end, you were talking about this whole question of kind of fear and anxiety that this is provoking on the part of some people. I just want the video of one Houston resident, a woman named Bernadette Lancelin, went viral last week. She was responding to the Department of Homeland Security officials who were touring an old middle school to see if it could house unaccompanied children. And here she is speaking to the Fox station KRIV.
Now billions of dollars want to be borrowed from the White House to help feed and house them. What about the kids here in our neighborhood, in our country? Don't bring them here. We don't have nothing for them. They're already taken away from my kids. I understand, President Obama, that it is a humanitarian issue. But look right within your own house. Look in your backyard, man.
Pastor Rasmus, I'm sure you've seen this. You're also in Houston. Are you hearing that as
yes.
well?
Well, you know, I understand how scarcity works in the broader context. And In the midst of an impoverished community, that's probably not an unusual response from a person who feels as though their own needs aren't getting met. But we do have to look beyond the our own needs to the needs of these children. You know, when I think about the challenges that these kids must be facing, I'm reminded of also the words of Jesus, who really reminds each of us that the kingdom of God belongs to kids, and when we reflect on the importance of providing a safe place, you know, the government agencies, I believe, will work through the challenges that are facing from a diplomacy standpoint. But in the midst of that, there's still a human need and a victim that is right now standing in the at the crossroads.
Are you preaching on this? And if so, what are you saying?
You know, we're talking about it. When we talk about the needs of those who have a safety concern a lot in our context in our ministry context because of our work in and around the homeless and hungry community in Houston. You know, every week we distribute about 18 tons of food to families, and many of those families are without documentation. But in the midst of that crowd every week, twice a week, I'm finding some incredible human beings who are adding value to the city as well. Mm-hmm. So there's a you know our neighbor, when we're responding to our neighbor, the question is always, who is our neighbor? And for me, it's always the person in front of me.
Russell, our final thought from you. What about you? I don't know if you're preaching at the moment, if you're pastoring a congregation, or this kind of is your ministry at the moment. What's your word on this?
Well, I think that the response that some people have is to blame the victim because of fear. This is a fearful situation. It's a situation out of control. But we cannot express rage toward these children who are seeking to escape from very dangerous situations. We ought to be angered by what's happening, but we ought to be angered at the cartels, at the terrorist networks in Central America that are trafficking in drugs and trafficking in human persons. And we also ought to say to our government officials, you have a responsibility given to you by God to maintain public order and justice, and you need to step up and do that.
And what are you going to do?
Well, I plan to work with elected officials to say we need to work on the humanitarian crisis first of all, and then we need to work on providing a system that's coherent and actually works, and then calling on the people of God to pray and to make sure that our consciences are compassionate and reaching outward toward those in need.
Russell Moore is the president of the Southern Baptist Convention's Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. He joined us from his office in Nashville. Rudy Rasmus is the senior pastor of St. John's Downtown in Houston. He joined us from member station KUHF in Houston. Pastors, thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.
In Catholic schools across the country, teachers are being asked to sign new contracts that include so-called morality clauses. Some of these forbid certain behaviors, like using birth control or entering into a same-sex marriage where it's legal. From member station KALW, Sandia Dirks reports on one such contract in Oakland, California, and how some parents are responding to it.
Maggie Cook sends her twins, Riley and Julia, to Bishop O'Dowd High School in Oakland. They're both juniors. Cook first heard about the morals clause when her kids made a casual comment just a few weeks before the end of the school year.
One of them just mentioned from the back seat that there was a new contract that the teachers were asked to sign and that a lot of them are not very happy about it.
That night, Cook went online to read the new contract. And what she learned is that by signing on the dotted line, teachers were agreeing to follow Catholic doctrine in the classroom. But some new language worried her.
And when I saw that it said both in their professional life, their teaching, and in their personal life. And I said, wait a second.
18% of the teachers in the Oakland Diocese aren't Catholic, and around 50% of the students aren't either. That's one of the reasons the Oakland Diocese changed the contract, according to spokesman Mike Brown.
So as that demographic changes, does the culture of the school change in any way? Are they as Catholic as they were founded to be 150 or 200 years ago?
Brown says the new contract merely reinforces centuries-old Catholic doctrine, including the belief that marriage is between one man and one woman.
The Catholic Church is not against gays. It can't support marriage between two same-sex people.
Brown says teachers at Catholic schools should be good representatives of the faith. But according to University of California, Berkeley law professor Melissa Murray, there's a legal strategy behind these morals clauses.
The U.S. Supreme Court has interpreted from the text of the First Amendment what is known as a ministerial exception.
Murray says the ministerial exception holds that if you are hired as a minister, then you can be fired for religious reasons. And Murray says contract language that elevates teachers to the role of ministers can be seen as a reaction to more and more states legalizing same-sex marriage. But being Catholic is not a license to discriminate, according to former Oakland Diocese teacher Kathleen Purcell.
These are contentious issues in the church. And what this contract language does is to place employees' personal lives in the middle of that fight. And that's cruel. That's just cruel.
Purcell is a former constitutional lawyer. She says this isn't just about the growing divide between Catholic doctrine and changing social mores. It's also about a clash over religious freedom. Parent Maggie Cook will be reluctantly sending her kids back to Oakland's Bishop O'Dowd High School for their senior year. But if they were younger?
We can't honestly say to someone else who's got an eighth grader applying to school, oh, I've got to come to O'Dowd. It's fantastic. You know, it's okay now, but I'm worried about the path it's going to take.
The Cook family goes to an Episcopal church. But Maggie Cook wanted the diversity and moral grounding that O'Dowd promised her kids, and she feels they did get that. Just take her son, 17-year-old Riley. He says he loves the school, but he's worried about his teachers. He knows that some of them are gay, and he says the school's mission is precisely about inclusion.
The contract and our charism are clashing with this contract. I just want it to be a place where I just want to go to a school where the teachers feel safe for who they are.
The Oakland bishop says he wants that too, and that he is open to removing the language in future contracts. For the coming academic year, the Morals Clause remains unchanged. For NPR News, I'm Sandhya Dirks in Oakland.